Radio Newark, the home of Radio Newark Sport. Weeknights from 7. Radio Newark Sport, brought to you with Smith's Timber Merchants for all your fencing, decking and DIY needs on Appleton Gate, Newark. Visit smithstimber.co.uk.
Well, it's day 2 of the autumn season with forecast gales. It's going to pour it down with rain. So what do? We talk cricket. And we find out which of our clubs enjoyed a golden summer and who hoped that the rain would save them. We talk to Harry Atkinson and Luke Chignall as we recount those heady days of sunshine and cucumber sandwiches. It's good to see the producer's writing skills haven't changed, Tony, isn't it? Dear, oh dear. Every Tuesday at 7:20, Amber Owens joins us for all the news and the gossip from Newark Athletic Club as they gear up to the cross-country season. And Newark Half Marathon Race Director Neil Myson was on day 2 of his Land's End to John O'Groats cycle ride when his support car had the sump ripped off it in a country lane somewhere in Devon. They're now on a recovery truck back to Newark. All the best laid plans of this sports show went straight out the window. Never mind. I'm Mick Bradley. He's Tony Smith. This is Radio Newark Sport. And these what's going to be the sporting headlines. It may be all sunshine at Lowfields, but at Station Road, Newark Town are battling a storm of their own. Saturday's 5-2 defeat at Welbeck was their fourth reversal in 5 outings. Better news though for Speedy's Grantham Town. Thanks to 2 goals in the last 4 minutes on Saturday against Workington, they sit second in the Evostick North Division. And 2 Fernwood fencers. Youngsters are following the footsteps of Ed Howlett. Arthur Eakin and Simon Elliott Bateman both took part in the Robin Hood Foil at the weekend. And 3 of our young stars recently took part in the school games. We've already told you about Amy Hunt's gold. But Anna Smith was there and Ed Howard himself. And they both came back with silver medals.
This is Radio Newark Sport.
And it is really the stories behind the headlines. First of all, Tony, we mentioned Amy's gold in the school games, and of course she went on City of the North games and got interviewed by Gabby Logan. She said, I've been interviewed by Mick and Tony to Gabby. Anyway, Amy Hunt.
Has she ever heard of us?
Yes, of course she's heard of us. Everybody's heard of us. Wrong reasons, but they've heard of us. And Anna Smith and Ed Howard also collecting silver medals at the National School Games, you know. So that's 3 medalists that we've got. And I'll have a story next week about a young lady that couldn't go to them because she's got something very special. But I can't talk about it. I'm embargoed.
Oh, yeah.
I have been embargoed. Not a pretty sight.
No, good Lord.
So you have to wait till next week for the story on that one. But sometimes, Mr. Smith, life and sport doesn't go according to the way that we would like it. Neil Myson was talking at the half marathon. His whole year was geared up to being race director at the half marathon and this 10-day cycle ride. And 2 days into it, not to name any names, John O'Lee, his car's sat-nav took him down this farmer's track in Devon for some inexplicable reason, instead of the A30 and the M5. Well, they can't cycle on that, I know, but... And it ripped the sump out the bottom of the car. They're on the way home. And I also hear over the weekend that Louise Orgill, great friend of this show, open water swimmer, she got halfway through a 6-hour swim when her body was basically shutting down through the cold.
Yeah.
So she had to abort that one. And remember, it's not so many weeks ago from the Iron Man up there at Bolton. We had Stacey and Bev in the studio, didn't we? Well, Bev told us she was going off to Wales to do the Iron Man there. She would not be beaten. Absolute total credit to her. After a 112-mile bike ride, she was single figures in seconds off the time.
Hmm.
Sometimes, Tony, sport can kick you in the teeth.
Isn't Louise the one that does it without the wetsuit, though?
Yes. You're not allowed to in that competition.
Mm.
Probably you should be allowed to.
If your body's closing down, it's probably a good idea to.
It probably is, but, you know, it's... We talk so many times on this show about the highs of sport. We're going to talk about them tonight.
Mm.
You know, your guys have had a fantastic cricket season, despite your umpiring.
Despite...
They really have had a good cricket season, but...
In the face of such adversity.
Yes. But on the days that it goes wrong, how hard was it to report on stories where it didn't go right? Because you've got to watch what you write, surely, because you don't want to upset the person who's upset enough. I mean, these three people are distraught.
But the first 6-7 years that I wrote about Newark Rugby Club, it was so easy, and everybody loved me. And then Newark Rugby Club started to go into a steady decline. And you got to report the bad times, and then people don't love you so much. It's not your fault, but that's human nature, isn't it?
It is, but we feel for Neil, for Louise, and for Bev, and we're hopefully going to catch up with Neil tomorrow night if the AA's got him back to Newark.
I mean, these days, bringing it up to the modern era, you've got to draw the line somewhere. I don't think you should report on Crystal Palace at the minute.
No.
Hi, Roy. Dear God.
You're moving away from Sam Allardyce's type of kick it and run football to learn how to be a footballing side.
In 1952.
And you've got four league matches to do it, and they replace you with a 70-year-old. Anyway, contradictions in terms. The biggest contradiction in terms that we have is Scotland and sport. Isn't it? Because you seem to like Scottish sport. I'm
just a glory hunter.
Can't understand Scottish sport whatsoever. But I've got two stories from Jocko Land for you. You'll like these one. The first woman to referee a senior men's game in Scottish football helps her emergence in the professional ranks will help young female officials to aim higher than they've ever been before. Lorraine Watson, this is the bit you'll like, took charge of Edinburgh City's 1-0 win over Berwick Rangers.
Oh, no.
So if you're going to blame anybody... The 52-year-old was appointed fourth official for four matches during the women's 2017 Euros. I've seen ladies officiate more and more. And you know what? They ain't bad.
There's no reason why they should be.
No.
You know, it's just...
plenty of men that don't understand the rules.
It's just a matter of fitness, really. If you've got that and you know the laws, you're off.
It was brilliant, she said. There was absolutely no reaction. They just treated me the same as they would any other referee. When they disagreed with my decisions, they shouted at me, just the same as if I was a male in the middle. As a referee, it doesn't matter if you're male, female, or any other difference in you. If the teams and supporters aren't happy with your decisions, they will pick up on something. And unfortunately, if you happen to be female, that's generally what they pick up on first. And they make comments regarding that. But it all goes back to decisions made on the field. And if I get it right and have a good game, they forget I'm a female.
Can I just talk about that fixture? Edinburgh City hadn't got a single point from their first five games of the season. They play Berwick Rangers and Berwick Rangers get nil against them.
Right, and if you think this programme couldn't go down any further, listen to the next one.
What, lower than Berwick Rangers?
Yes, and it has done. Tony Blair.
Oh, yeah, fair enough.
Became obsessed with creating a British Football League as a way to bring the UK together, the former Prime Minister has revealed. Mr Blair said he believed that merging the Scottish and English leagues would strengthen the bonds between the two nations after devolution. But he said a British national football team would be a step too far. So that got me thinking. Where would Berwick Rangers play in the pyramid of the English football? Are they going to be playing Flowserve at the weekend? He's speechless.
I think Flo Serve would batter him. No, I think Berwick Rangers are all right where they are, really.
Yeah, the trouble is they don't know where they are, do they?
Well, it's the only English team that plays in Scottish football, but I think they found the niche in the bottom rung of Scottish football.
The bottom of the bottom rung, yeah. In Scottish football.
And they are now third off bottom.
Can you hear it?
Yes, indeed.
For the last time.
My favourite cricket tune ever.
The last ever time. For the ones of you that was on Planet Zog last season, we asked the producers to give us some summer music. And this is what he gave us.
It says summer in it.
It says summer in it. So it's summer music, according to our producer.
It says wine. I think he also drinks that, doesn't he?
He drinks a lot of that, yes, trust me.
It's about his choices in music, yes.
He does.
It might be a problem.
The cricket season has come and gone. Was it enjoyed by all? Or was it enjoyed by a few? Let's have a quick look before we talk to our guests about their season. Division A, and a respectable fourth place in the end for Collingham. But a disaster, really, for Balderton. They had a 30-point lead over Attenborough with four matches left. And by the end of the season, there was 3 points adrift of them. The Plainfield side has lost more matches, 12, than any other team in that division. Now, think back to May, Tony, when they all come in and talk to us. Collingham was hoping to repeat last year's runners-up.
Mm.
It wasn't quite to be, but I would have thought fourth was satisfactory. Ollie Dyson, player of the season for them. Balderton, we just got that vibe, didn't we? That it was going to be a long, hard season for them. Now, we don't know yet if the bottom two are going down. That's still to be decided, but you would assume in any sport the top two and the bottom two should. And if that is the case, they will go down to Division B, which is got to be down as a disaster. But they'll rebuild, I'm sure they will. But I don't think they could get a Chris Dobbin, Jacko, Dominic Whiffin. They tried to lead it, but they just want enough of them. And in that Division A, you've got to have quality all the way through.
I don't know what the promotion and relegation system is in the other divisions, but in Division E, the top two went up and the bottom three went down.
The problem was at the top, they can't, until Bassett Law finish, there's not a lot they can do.
Hmm.
But Attenborough's first team will now not be coming down, so I think that in effect puts Bolton down, which, as I say, is sad. But there is going to be a local derby next season, and I'll come to that soon. We now go to Division C, where Farndon also look to have been relegated by a margin of 3 points, despite winning on the last weekend of the season. And that does set up a couple of local derbies, doesn't it, with Newark R&M, who are coming up. And I can't wait for that, Farndon against Newark. I mean, they're a stone's throw, really, aren't they? So that should be good.
But it should be good as well, because Farndon and Newark R&M have a very good relationship, as we saw on the last day of the season. Their players get on well with our players, and I think that should make it two enjoyable occasions.
We're going to talk Newark R&M after 7:30, because they've actually got to be our team of the season. But a few stats. No team in the South Notts Village League collected more points than Newark R&M. How many points did they get?
I think it was officially 327.
I've got 325, so your counting's right. Wrong again.
Well. Hi, West Bridgeford.
Or had more victories in a season. How many victories did Newark R&M get?
16 on the bounce.
16 on the bounce. They started off with a defeat, and then they had an infamous tie. We'll come back to that.
Oh, God.
I like to call that Tony's tie.
Yeah. Oh, is that the time? Bye.
We've got an umpire. He can't count, but we've got an umpire. They finish on a winning streak of 14 matches and 107 points clear of third place Beaver. Flinton were also promoted from Division F, despite a late season wobble. Bolton's seconds, like their first team, are going to be relegated. And interestingly, Southwell also suffered the same fate with both their first and seconds relegated. More good news came out of Kelham Rogue when everybody learned that the seconds was crowned champions of K.
That's quite a moment in the party.
Farndon seconds avoided the drop by 8 points. And finally, RHP finished third in their first season in the league, playing in Division L. All in all, Tony, I think the sun shone more than it didn't. You didn't lose that much to the weather. For Kate, you know, car and Matt off for 5 minutes. Your overview on the local cricket season?
I thought Newark R&M were fantastic. I can't take my Newark R&M hat off. It's the best summer of my life. But generally, apart from ourselves and Collingham, it looked like a disappointing one, didn't it? In terms of our local teams.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. But, you know, when you're so involved with one club, then although you're supposed to carry your Radio Newark responsibilities through, there's no way I can be impartial after that summer. It was just absolutely gobsmacking. And the great thing was, I think we lost about six overs during the whole of the summer, and that was away at Notts Unity Casuals.
This is a conversation not about Newark R&M.
Yeah, you got no chance of that tonight, mate.
I tell you what, I need amber. Every Tuesday night throughout the autumn and winter season, we have the privilege of going live to Newark Athletic Club's training centre to talk to the wonderful Amber Owens. Amber, welcome back.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Is it windy there, Amber?
Thanks, yeah, it's very windy.
Amber, you've got... We've not talked to you for about 6 weeks, so there's lots and lots to talk about.
Yeah,
There is only one place to start, though, isn't there? Because let's take it back to springtime when the Twins managed to dive headlong into the water jump.
I knew you were going to start with this.
There is now pictures on Facebook, thanks to your wonderful father, of the eldest daughter doing exactly the same. And when I get home tonight, they're going on the Radio Newark Facebook
page. Oh, Amber, no.
Amber, you've let me down.
I'm sorry.
Is it something that runs in the family?
Oh.
Talk me through it. What happened?
Right, well, I thought I was all right. You know, I was just going round. It was getting towards the end. I mean, it's near the end of the season now, so it wasn't a quick steeplechase race. It was quite, it wasn't slow. It was kind of in the middle. And I was on, like, the last lap, and I went round, and I felt quite tired, and I was going up to the water jump, and I went to put my foot on the water jump, and as I landed on the barrier, I kind of didn't, and my front foot went on the edge, and then I literally faced, like, belly flopped in the water, and then I kind of, like, didn't really know where I was, and I, like, started swimming, and I was like, what am I doing? And then I realised I was in the race, and I was, like, swimming for, like, 2 minutes before I actually got up and ran.
What did the Twins say to you?
The Twins just laughed at me. Everyone laughed at me. And Tiddy, the first thing Tiddy said when I came out the water was, Amber, it's all fine, we got it on video. I was like, great.
That was at the Lincolnshire County Championships, Amber.
Yeah, that was Lincoln County Champs. Yeah.
And I, from my little notes, I've got a victory for Lauren.
Oh, yeah, Lauren came... Because it was me and Lauren were in the same, well, we were in the same race. We weren't, obviously, we were different age groups. But Lauren was Lincs County Champion for steeplechase and for triple jump, and she did really well.
That's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. And I've also got a gold medal there for Newark Athletic Club stalwart Martin Waite.
Yeah, he did really well in the 10K. He literally, because quite a few people in it, but he kept lapping them. He was really good, yeah.
So.
And the day before, he'd done the Basingham Bash, which was like, it was about 7 or 8 miles, and it was like a road run, and he did that and did really well the day before. So he'd, like, done that on the Saturday, and then on the Sunday did the 10K.
Young man that I don't know a lot about, and I'm hoping you can tell me a little bit about him, is Luke Sayer.
Oh, yeah, he comes running here. I mean, we're really good friends with him. But he kind of does everything. So, obviously, he does, like, combined events. So he jumps, he throws, he sprints. But he did really well because he won the Yorkshire Combined Open.
It is, and I think that was seven events, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm sure it's seven events.
Now,
he obviously
your head got. Girl, your head girl at a very posh school. So
it's not that posh, Ben.
So what is seven events called?
Seven events.
Heptathlon.
Really?
See?
Ah.
Yeah, you see?
It is a posh school.
This is why
they can count.
This is why she's a girl.
No, it's not.
So that was a fantastic win for him, though, wasn't it? The Yorkshire Combined Open, to come back with a win from that.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah.
The next young man on my list is George Bacon.
Oh, George did. George also did really well because he hasn't been at the club for very long, and he does rugby as well. So he comes on, like, Thursdays, and he's, like, really good at throwing. And he's been, like, practising his hammer, and he was third in the Midland Champs, which is really good because it's quite a high-level competition.
And so, yeah. The final name on my list, following sort of Lauren and Martin, Luke and George, Samo Farah. Who's been obnoing with Samo Farah?
Oh, right, okay, so, this is quite a long story. I'll try and be quick with it.
No, you're all right.
Okay, basically, me and my sisters, so me, Tilly and Lauren, we decided to go to a steeplechase training. It was like a training session, and it was in Birmingham, and it was with Helen Clitheroe, who's obviously, she used to do long distance, and then at the end of her career did steeplechase, and then with another person called Luke Gunn. And obviously, because they've been quite good athletes, and they've done, you know, really high-quality races and stuff, and they've obviously done really well in their careers. So we went to do training with them, and they said that they could get free tickets to the Diamond League. And obviously, because the Diamond League was on the same day, so we did the training in the morning, and then they said that they could get us free tickets. So we went to the Diamond League, and then they were there, and they gave us free tickets, so we got in for free. And then, and the seats were amazing, because we sat right on the 100 metre straight, right by the finish. We had the best seats as well, so we didn't actually have to pay anything to get in, really. And then, obviously, Mo was running, because it was the Diamond League, and it was his last, like, British race. And in the end, like, when he finished, he like, came round doing his Sash of Honour, and we got a photo with him, so...
That is the photo, isn't it? That's the one you're going to keep.
Yeah.
Did you hear that, Mick?
Not the photo of headlong into the water, the photo of Samo Farah. I heard it was just a Mo come past.
Mo.
I did pick up she's on first name terms. Yeah. Absolutely fantastic. Winter season starts on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any races, I don't think, until halfway through October.
It's a good life for some.
So I have quite a long time. Yeah, but for, like, the younger ones, a lot of them have, like, mini league and stuff, and they're, like, new, they're like, cross-countries. So, and obviously I have sports on as well, which is, like, an indoor athletics thing.
You should have dried out by then.
Yeah, that will start on the weekend, so.
And isn't it the first round of the mini league on Sunday?
Yeah.
That's traditionally at Retford, I think, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, I think they do swap them around depending on who wins each year.
Are the twins in the mini league this year?
No, they're too old.
They're too old as well.
They finished last year, yeah.
You're all growing old.
I know.
So that's your task for next Tuesday night, Amber, to find out how the Newark AC youngsters got on in the mini league, and then you can tell us all about it.
Okay, I will do.
And in the meanwhile, I'll go and find that photo for Facebook.
Oh, okay.
Amber, an absolute pleasure as ever, and we can't thank you enough for looking after us here on Radio Newark and telling us all about Newark Athletic Club.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Amber.
Cheers, Amber.
Okay, bye-bye. It's one of the joys of this show, you know, talking to people with the enthusiasm of Amber.
Yeah.
It really is.
Top-level steeplechasers, yeah.
Oh, top-level. they know how to swim. They do. Still to come... Newark R&M Cricket Club's season to remember, despite the umpire. But first of all, let's have a few national headlines. Time to welcome our guest who's been sitting there very quietly while Tony's waffled on. Club chairman from Newark R&M, Luke Chignall, and club captain from Newark R&M, Harry Atkinson. Gentlemen, good evening. Welcome back, in both of his case, to Radio Newark. We started in May, when we had the pre-season sort of conversations, where you came into Harry and everybody was sort of asked what was going to be the minimum they required. And your minimum was promotion. So that was in May. We're now in September. Job done, Harry?
Yeah, it's gone pretty well, hasn't it? And I was a bit, perhaps, arrogant in claiming that at the start of the season. But thankfully, my team have backed me. And we've delivered what we ain't set out to do at the start of the year. With the addition of a few extra players, similar team to last year. We just had that belief. We knew what we wanted to do. Everyone worked hard and we've achieved what we wanted.
From the chairman's point of view, it had to be promotion, Luke, didn't it? Because we cannot have the team that carries the town name in Division 5. It's just not good enough. So you had to oversee a transformation on the field, and you also had to make the club off the field start to tick again, didn't you? How did you go about that?
You're absolutely right about the promotion issue. As a club, we've known that for far too long we've been carrying a big responsibility, which we've wanted, and we've not been fulfilling that responsibility, frankly. And this year we set about wanting to change that. And I think when Harry said on this show earlier in May that he wanted promotion, he was speaking on behalf of everyone at the club who were all pushing in that direction. They weren't going to settle for anything less than that. And as for how we've done it, well, obviously the results come on the field, but it does have a lot to do with what's happening off the field, because this is a game that we play because we enjoy. And ultimately, that's why we do it. That's why we play cricket and we don't do something else on our Saturdays. And part of that enjoyment isn't just the 4 or 5 hours that you're together on the field, but it's getting together before the game, it's getting together after the game, it's celebrating and enjoying the friendships within that community that you get. And I think by building that, what we've meant is that we've got a club of people who don't just feel like they turn up, play their game and go home, but feel like they're playing for something a bit more. They're playing for their mates, they're playing for their community, they're playing for the town. And that's something that comes from developing that bond off the field that then translates, rather, that bond off the field that translates onto the field.
And they are playing for the town because it carries the town's name. It also carries a weight in history. And I went down 2 or 3 times, and one thing that got me thinking, and this is probably me just being me, in the olden days, when Kelham Road was, before it got realigned, you used to drive past the cricket club and everybody could see there was a cricket club there. And everybody could see that Newark was playing cricket, and you saw the scoreboard that come from Lords and all things like that. Now you're tucked away a little bit, aren't you, and you're sort of hidden from everybody. Has that had any effect at all, do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, certainly from the ground outwards, it's perfect. You've got a picturesque view that you'll have seen from the pavilion when you're looking past, and you can see the spire from the church. You can see all across, basically, the I don't want to over-egg it, the skyline of Newark.
It's there, isn't it? Because we all know of this photo this painting in the long room. Well, I took a photo and put it on social media during the summer, and apart from the fact the trees are taller, it hasn't changed, has it?
No, it hasn't. You've got that lovely outlook onto the town.
They're still not built the castle back.
and that's exactly what you can never lose from that place. You can't lose that character. You can't lose that feeling. Yeah, the road doesn't obviously go immediately past that. I'm sure there are advantages to that as well for us. The fact that we do have that stretch of Kelham Road that we've got, I don't know, to avoid us having problems that I know other clubs sometimes suffer, where you've got a lot of through traffic coming through. We've got a bit of privacy there, but at the same time, we are close enough to the town. And certainly for the players that are playing there, you can't miss when you look on out from the pavilion, when you're on the field and you're looking over, you can see over the Trent, you can see the castle, you can see the church. You can't forget that you're playing for Newark.
It is one of the views. I mean, I go around these cricket pitches and, I love Dale Field. Mm. The view, the best view in a cricket pitch is Newark's. Mm. And that's just how it is, isn't it? Let's go back, though. I want to take it back. You obviously sat down and talked before this season started, and it's all right, all saying in here, and Harry coming in, and he said, this is what we want. You've got to get the players to want to turn up every Saturday. You've got to get the players that's good enough to get you out of that division. So was it a long winter for both of you of putting the team together? Or had the team that you'd got, was they good enough? Because we can't forget, you went into this season, on the back of 3 consecutive relegations?
Well, last season we stayed in the league. We was in the same league as we were this year, last year. And I've always thought, looking at some of the players in that team, we always bat, everyone's capable of scoring runs in that team. I always look around and think, why do we not win games? Why do we not win the league? Because we all play against teams, I think we're better than this team. Why have we not won? And I just think the togetherness that we've got as a bunch, group of lads, there's, what, six, probably 16, 17 lads have represented the first team this year. And it's just a real club togetherness at the minute where, especially with the second team also winning games of cricket, you've got people coming in and everyone's playing for each other. We're playing to celebrate after the game, as Tony will vouch for. That's his favourite part of the Saturday. We want to go to the bar after the game and then celebrate a win. And I think the ability's always been there. Like I said, we've added three or four over the winter, which proved to be a big boost to us as well, because it's just pushed players around a little bit. It's kept the second team stronger. And then players that have come in have been really good. We've had Craig Drury, like we said, Richard Andrew, Robin Curtis. Can't remember if there's anyone else. A few others, perhaps. Second team, whatever.
I'm sure they'll let you know once they finish listening.
I'm sure you'll be told.
Oh, Joe Smith as well. I'm glad I mentioned Robin Curtis. That's the one I had to make sure I mentioned.
And Joe as well. He was a Royal Marine, yeah.
Yeah, Joe.
The season... Yeah, we went in with such high hopes, didn't we? But you lost the first match. That's a long time ago now, isn't it?
I didn't like that feeling.
You started off with a defeat and you thought, oh dear.
Yeah, it was a tough opening game.
Here we go again.
I think we do start slowly. I don't think I've ever won an opening game of the season for Newark. We all seemed to start slow and it was not the nicest feeling there after I'd said we was going to win the league in here and I told everyone, I was like, oh dear. But yeah, it's changed around since then. Once we got our first win under our belt, and then we got the second and third, and it started building. And then it was a case of, right, we've actually won seven on the bounce now. Can we keep going? And it just kept turning over. And then we was like looking down. Can we get clear of third? Yeah, we're about clear of third. Can we get clear of second now and win the league? It's just, I don't know how we managed to win 16 on the bounce.
Yeah. But that first game was a double disappointment for me, because at that stage I didn't actually know the rules of the South Notts League. I thought we'd got a losing draw.
Would you consider that you do know the rules of the South Notts League now, Tony?
Let's talk about the second game of the season, because for many that was the highlight of the whole season.
This radio station, that was the highlight of the whole season.
You don't get a tie in cricket very often, but Harry, you managed to tie.
We did. I don't quite know how we managed to tie.
I do. We can't count.
No, it was a game we should have won, and that was really frustrating after losing the first game. I didn't know we was going to go on to win 16 after that.
It was a game we did win.
Yeah, we did win.
Just, I mean, it doesn't matter.
No.
You won by 107 points at the end of the season, and that's just confined to the history books and is the source of amusement to be for months. But when a player or an umpire makes a mistake and it costs you a game, which it did, what's the captain's sort of reaction? I know what the reaction will probably be on Saturday at 6 o'clock, but, you know, looking back on it, Harry, how do you, as a captain, talk to the player or the umpire that has made, we all make them. Yeah. Crap, you want to sit here every night, but, you know, we all make them. But how does a captain sort of put, are you an arm round a player, or do you sort of let him know that it was wrong, or how do you do it?
I don't think, I'd never go down that line that anyone would ever cost you a game, like a player or an umpire. I don't believe Tony did it. He's doing himself down. I think we got ourselves into a bit of a pickle in that game. We should have won the game. It got a lot closer than it ever should have done. We were in a very good position. I don't ever think that anyone's...
But what I'm really saying is, Harry, how do you manage your group?
You want to...
I was going to put in with my other cap, because I do captain our development team, and it is interesting that we had similar situations. Obviously, like a lot of those development teams, it's about the life lessons as much as it's about making people better at cricket. We've got 13, 14-year-olds making up five or six players on our team, and we want to not just make them better cricketers, but make them better human beings if we can. And one of the things that I think, when you are facing that position where you've got people that are struggling or that are doing things. They dropped that catch of the bloke that went on to get 120, or in the case of an umpire, you know, they've missed that clear nick behind that should have been out. You've got to take responsibility for your own game, and that's what we encourage, certainly amongst our youth, which is, okay, what will happen will happen. What you can't control, you can't control. But you can obviously do what you do to the best of your ability. And as long as everybody takes responsibility for their game and tries the best, mistakes will happen. Even when you take responsibility, mistakes will happen.
I think, again, what I'm trying probably badly to get round to is that a captain in football could almost be anybody. You wouldn't really know who was captain. A captain in cricket, you play for that captain, don't you? The captain is the pinnacle of the team. He makes the decisions. Who's going, who bats where, who bowls when. He makes it. So the rest, the other 10 that's out there are playing for Newark, but they're also playing for Harry Atkinson, aren't they? So do you find it, do you think about it all week, Harry? Is it something that's on your mind? The captain of a cricket team, I think, is one of the hardest jobs in sport.
I think the batting lineup's something that obviously you can disappoint people where they're batting. It's difficult with that respect. I do think about that, but I often have a batting lineup in mind before a game, and then we'll bowl first and say bowl the team out relatively cheap, and that batting lineup's changing. In my mind, I'm thinking, oh, we'll try and send in someone like Steve to get off to a good start. I change things during the game. I often start batting at 4 and end up it going in at number 9. That's just how it is. Bowling's, I prefer the fielding side of things. I hate watching us bat. I'd rather be out there in the field with, saying, Craig Drury, James Faulkner open the bowling most weeks. And then you get instinctive thoughts, who should bowl next? You've got your spinners, Matt Evans, whatever. That's not too hard. I just hate watching my team bat, to be honest.
I think you feel responsibility as a captain, but to be honest, across all of our teams this year, it's not just playing for a captain, it's certainly not playing for themselves, but it is playing for the team, playing for the club, and you share that around a bit. And I think as a captain, that helps you, in a sense, sift that responsibility a little bit. And it's not just about you, it's not just about your game, it's about everyone out there playing for each other. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're a captain and you've observed an umpire miss a nick behind or something, that's between that umpire and that player. And I think the best thing about cricket, I still think the best thing about cricket, is unlike so many other sports where you might turn up for 2 hours or something and then you're done, the fact that cricket is long and the fact there's an opening batsman, your day could be over at 2:05 with a 2 o'clock start. If you do get a bad call or something, that means that there's more to cricket than there are to a lot of other sports, and it means that you are giving up your whole Saturday for the sake of your mates. Your day's over by 2:05. You've done what you came here to do. You've missed out on your chance to score 100, but you're still there, you're still out on the field, and you are playing for each other. And that, I think, is the biggest tribute that I would pay to any cricketer who's playing regularly on Saturday, whatever team, whatever club, whatever level, because that really takes commitment.
Somebody asked me if the 16 successive victories was what brought about the great team spirit in the first 11. And I said to them, no, it's the great team spirit in the first 11 that led to those 16 victories, because it wasn't just turning up for the cricket match and then having a few drinks together. We turned up for breakfast together. And it started from very early in the morning, even before we got round to thinking about the cricket match. And then after the cricket match, we stayed together for a hell of a lot of drinks. So it was a full Saturday. And then that's what brought about a record 16 successive victories.
When does the hard work start then, Mr. Chairman, for 2018 or 17, whatever comes next, 18?
I think 18. We can...
Yeah, research, that's the secret, yeah. Research.
I think we can't either.
We can allow ourselves a little bit of a... A relaxed winter, but I think really cricket is, even though you're only playing in the summer, got to be a game where you're continuing to keep people engaged, keep people interested all year round. I mean, we'll start technically our nets probably as early as January, which is about as early as you can go, probably give it a week or two after the new year. You get some people who are well up for it then, some people who'd be out there netting this week if they could, they'd start their winter nets 2 weeks after the end of the summer season. But I think we'll then gradually start to pick it up again, and we'll hopefully continue this momentum that we've got from this year. I mean, we've ended this year in fantastic... Well, we've not ended it yet. We've got our end of season due coming up. We've got our own chance to reflect on what we've done this year. And what I'm hoping is that the season, or the off-season, is going to be so long that we lose that momentum. I don't think we will.
No, you've got to keep it. You've got to keep it. I would have think, from as much as you was delighted that the first team won, as a chairman, the second team also winning and getting promotion means that the club is pointing in the right direction.
Absolutely right. And one of the concerns for clubs across the country is the disparity you get between a first team and a second team and the lack of connection that you get there. And what we've proven this year is that we've had a first team that have been bold enough to come out and say, we want to win promotion, we want to win the league. You've got a second team who, to be honest, weren't sure where they were going to be, weren't sure whether or not that was going to be at the expense of them. Were they going to be completely drained and everybody who showed an ounce of talent put in the first team? Well, they've answered that question. No, they haven't lost a game since, I think, May or June themselves. They've been undefeated in July, undefeated in August, and they're on, I believe, an 11-game winning streak moving into next year themselves. And of course the headline is going to be that your first team has won 16 in a row, but you're absolutely right. From a second team perspective, it shows that we are a club with some depth. We're not just a club that's got a good first team and then falling apart underneath that. It shows some grounding and foundation to the whole club, not just to one of the teams at the club. And that's why I think Jim Mackay and the work that he's done in the second team this year has been fantastic.
You look after the third team, which is predominantly youngsters. I mean, the great thing I find in cricket, I do struggle to understand it at times, is the way they let children play with in an adult game. You know, it's not, if you're under 16, you can't play this game. If you're good enough at 13 and 14, you're in there, and that's the division that you're in, and the scope where you are is to bring Newark's future players through.
That's the plan. And as I mentioned earlier on, that's about both the ability, the experience of playing cricket. It's about batting and bowling, but it's also about how they adapt to what is a different game. It's a long game. It's a game where you have to give up, as I mentioned earlier, on your whole Saturday to play. And I think engendering some sort of positive approach towards that from an early age is the most important thing that team can do. It's not about going along on a Saturday and just going third man to third man every week and batting number 11 and maybe getting a customary over when you're already 350 runs down. It's about actually going out there and enjoying the game, because it is a fun game. That is why we do it. We play cricket because we enjoy it, not because we're getting paid anything for it. We go out there every week because we love the sport. And if we can help our junior players to start loving the sport now, they will be taken over from Harry sort of in the next, I don't know, 2 or 3 years. Sorry, Harry. But
that's you out.
No, slightly longer than that.
We'll give you another season. Overall, Lou, cricket, local cricket, Tony's basically said that Collingham had an acceptable season. They finished fourth. You've got to, you know, if you finish fourth in Division A, then you haven't had a bad season. That's really acceptable. But it looks like Bolton are going down. It looks like Farndon are going down. Rebuilding for both those two clubs, I mean Farndon, I think they only came up last year, didn't they? There are a bit of a yo-yo in that respect, and it does give us this fantastic local derby. Bolton, they've got a rebuilding job to do.
Yeah, they have, and I think it's certainly something that we look at. Everyone that always comes on here, I love this about cricket, always says that they want strong local teams. They don't want any team to collapse. They want each other to be strong. We want Bolton to be a strong team, we want Farndon to be a strong team, we want Collingham to be a strong team, all of our local teams. And from our point of view, we've obviously been in the position that potentially those clubs are heading towards, but it's difficult. You always will have peaks and troughs as a club, and Collingham we've been particularly close to this year because that's where we've played our games as a third team, and generally we've played our third team games there while their first team have been playing. And you can see the passion with all their first teamers, and you can see that Collingham have got that good setup spanning across their teams. Bolton, Farndon, yeah, there'll be things that they need to do potentially to adapt. But I don't think Bolton will be out of action for long. I think that they will do well in Division B. I think they will compete there. I think they'll retain some strength. When you look down into their second team, they've got some players who, if they can get them into playing in the first team, will do very well for them. There was Josh Tranter, who I know scored 100-odd in one of the last couple of weeks of the season. Saw his name appear several times that second team scorecard. And once they're ready and willing to be playing first team cricket, Bolton, I think, will be strong. And likewise with Farndon.
Okay, I've got to go for a break now. Coming up, a cricket story from Wales that I just need Harry to tell me what he would have done. And for the second night running since we've come back, I've put the headphones on and without the glasses. So there'll now be a shout and a short pause. Well, I put the glasses on. Right, here we go. Harry.
Slick Mick.
Yeah. Ah, sorry, you'd never have noticed. Harry. It's not just cricket. Club side declares to stop rivals. Pembroke County Cricket Clubs, Carlow and Cressy, have fallen out over the early declaration that decided the Division 1 title. Carlow declared on 18 for 1 after just 2.3 overs, and Cressy reached that target in 2 overs to win the game. However, Cressy could not gain enough bonus points to go above Carlow, who then claimed the title by 1 point. The declaration was within the laws of the game, but it has been questioned whether the decision was in the right spirit. If you went into that situation, 1v2, and you was one, and you was in exactly that situation, Harry.
I don't know what to say.
What would you do?
Just don't say yes, to be honest.
We've got a few blokes in our team who would definitely be promoting doing the declaration. Steve Kennywell.
Steve Kennywell. I was waiting for that name to come up.
No, it's not very sporting. You suppose you could back your team to get the points required. How many points was it they required to win that game? Was it?
Well, they fell one point short because they couldn't get enough bonus points.
See, I don't think that would ever happen in the South Knots because of the point structure.
The way they've got it. Yeah.
If you declare you give the full bowling points to that team anyway. So, no, it's not.
There is.
It's hard to say.
I still have this dream that in cricket there is still. Somewhere there, the spirit of it being a gentleman's sport. Sometimes it don't come over like that, but more often than not, it does come over. Are you cricket fans?
Yeah.
I mean, I know you play cricket, so you must like cricket, but do you listen to cricket? Do you keep in touch with England and Notts and all that?
I keep an eye on it. I don't watch it as much as I used to. When I was younger, I used to be well into it. But
Do you listen to Test Match Special on Radio 4?
Yeah.
I mean, this is going... And the blow floats, retired blowers. Yeah. And I saw him at the Palace a couple of years ago, and it was an absolutely cracking evening. And yes, you could say he's don't know what he's talking about anymore. And he's, but, you know, isn't that the English summer, listening to blowers talking about red buses and pink pigeons and whatever else?
Well, one of my last jobs at the Advertiser, because Roger Palby, the owner of the Advertiser, was a mad keen cricket fan. He used to go on the England winter tours. And he was chairman of Newark Cricket Club for 2 or 3 seasons. And one of my last and most embarrassing jobs at the Advertiser was being pictured presenting a nice cake to Henry Blofeld outside the wine shop opposite the Advertiser. So, and then again, when the Derek Randall suite opened at Trent Bridge, I was actually on a table at the dinner launch with Henry Blofeld and Brian Johnston. And that was a cracking...
Oh, what a night that would be.
It was a lunchtime, but it was a very wobbly afternoon.
We've got the Ashes coming up in the winter. Do we stand a chance out in Australia?
I think there are certain questions that England need to resolve before they get there. There's still an issue with who's opening, and we're not gonna let them have a go at our openers because we're going to keep them resting throughout the winter. So if they're spying around Division E and thinking they're going to pick up a couple of ours, then
Bimal's not available.
I'd love to see Hamid do well, and he played a knock that was fantastic. I love the fact that he went about an hour without scoring a run, which I found admirable. And I'd love to see him do well. Obviously, he was trying to play for England before, and it didn't work out so well. So he went back into Lancashire, playing at county level. And now it appears that he's found his form again. I would love to see him kickstart ahead of the Ashes. But we'll see. I mean, he's still young. You were talking earlier on about, in our league, younger 13, 14-year-olds obviously playing in the league that we play, in South Knots Cricket League. 5 years later, and you've got lads there that are playing for England, which is another incredible feature about the sport. But I think we've got a chance.
I think if you go into an Ashes series, particularly down under, not knowing who your number 2, 3 and 5 are in your top 5 batting order, the chance is very minimal of doing well.
Would you say Hales?
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to disagree.
I would, but not as an opener, as a number 5. I think he can't do any worse than what Milan and Wesley have done.
Yeah.
And I think, to be honest, they say about England having problems, I don't think Australia are the team they've been over the last few years, so... Both teams have got things that they're struggling with at the minute, so it could go either way, to be honest.
When you saw Australia lose by 20 runs to Bangladesh,
exactly, yeah.
I think
you laughed.
I think it could well end as a draw, that one.
let's go back to what we're here for, really, and that's Newark. And we've said, and the chairman said he's going to have a couple of weeks off before he starts thinking of next season. You've got the pavilion looking pristine. The new scoreboard looks good. What are you going to do with the old Lord scoreboard? You can't let it just go to rack and ruin. You can't.
No, I feel the pressure in the eyes of the history of Newark Cricket Club on me now. And I say that literally with our next presenter nearby as well, who's obviously been part of the club for so long. But no, we respect that. That is a massive part of that ground. And even though it takes about 15 people and a team of 10 others to try and get it working from time to time, it's something that we need to preserve and we need to look after. And at the start of this year, the cricket force that we have, which is part of the national initiative to get grounds going, we don't forget it, we don't neglect it, we try and paint it up so it's at least visually appealing as it is now. The truth is that the game is obviously going digital, and the scoreboard that we've got there is fantastic now. It's much easier to control. And of course, that's the way that
fully,
the practical scoring will go.
I fully agree with you on that one. And if it's just a question of painting it and giving it some love, because like that view, that scoreboard is now also part of Newark.
Yes, it is. And we're so proud to have had it, and it's survived this long, so we're certainly not going to let it go to waste now.
Good. I'll record that, because I got it recorded when he said he was going to win promotion.
In 30 years'
time. I would have used that one back. So we'll use that back as well. We look forward to next season. And come May, when the captain comes in here again, if you vote him in as captain again, the captain comes in here again, and I hope he's going to tell me again. Promotion.
We can't get promoted again, I'll be sacked.
Yes, that's another good reason. We need that town team up there. Luke Chignall, Harry Atkinson, it's been a great season for Newark Arnhem, and it's so nice to actually say that. It really has. The town team is back on the map, and that's where they should be. Tomorrow night's show, Natalie Blake's coming in.
Oh, good.
Tony. So Natalie's going to tell us why she's off on her travels again.
She was excellent last time.
And Claire Hundley's coming in with a couple of lads from Flowserve Diamonds. Who was at the Special Olympics. How good is that? And they're going to tell us all about what is the highlight of their lives so far. So we look forward to tomorrow night. We're going to try and catch it with Neil as well, if the AA man's got him back to to Newark. But next, we stick with the Newark R&M theme with the club stalwart who's standing behind me, glaring at these two. Stuart Preston, he's singing the blues.